On Tech News Today, President Obama announces the fate of your phone metadata. Twitter becomes more like Facebook, but why? Twitter also becomes more like iTunes, and Apple patents a method for texting while walking. All that and more coming up next.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Thursday, March 27th, 2014. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Nature Box, where you can order great-tasting, healthy snacks delivered right to your door. Forget the vending machine and get in shape with healthy, delicious treats like citrus, chipotle, chickpeas. To get 50% off your new box, go to naturebox.com/twit. That's naturebox.com/twit. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free 2-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Mike Elgin.
And I'm Jason Howell.
Tech News Today explores the big stories of the day in conversation with some of the world's best journalists. Our guest co-anchor today is Daryl Etherington, a writer for TechCrunch. Welcome, Daryl.
Thanks, Mike. Happy to be here.
Glad to have you on for your first time. You've been on as an interview guest, but this is your first time as a guest co-anchor, so I welcome you today. And we've got tons of interesting news, so let's get right to it. President Barack Obama announced this morning his highly anticipated plan to deal with the mass collection of phone metadata by the NSA. His plan? Make the telecom companies hang on to it. The NSA could then access the data with court permission. Daryl, this sounds like a generally bad solution, if you can call it that. And the reason I say that is because essentially it burdens the companies like AT&T and Verizon with the requirement to have to devote staff and resources to providing this information to the NSA when they decide that they need it or when the court gives them permission to need it. That's one reason why it's a bad idea. But that's my take off the top of my head. What's your take on this when you heard this news?
Would you rather that they just had all the data that they got to keep it, like permanently, the government, versus, you know, the private company being expected to spend a little more on resources to maybe add an extra layer of sort of protection for individuals' privacy? Or because I think my understanding is that this is in lieu of the government having a huge trove of all this data and keeping it and having access to it whenever they want.
Well, the one benefit of this is that the requirement to hang on to data, whoever is doing it, goes from 5 years to 18 months. So that's an improvement. Now, if somebody's going to hang on to this data for 18 months, I think it should be another branch of the government, not the NSA, but some other branch of the government, simply for because of this burden thing. Now, there are a couple of other rotten things about this, in my opinion, but one of them is this idea that once they get a court approval to track somebody that they suspect of terrorism, the companies are required to hand over every subsequent phone call metadata piece of information that comes from that point forward on that situation. So it's going to be it's not like, you know, 10 times a year they have to go into a database and copy and paste some information in email and send it over to the NSA. No, it's not going to be like that at all. It'd probably be a huge number of requests. They're going to probably be very detailed. And then once a request starts, it doesn't end there. It continues ad nauseum into the future. And, you know, it's essentially co-opting private companies, privately owned companies, you know, public companies, but companies that are owned by their shareholders, into this whole process where they have to sort of be part of this mass surveillance apparatus.
So I think then it's just a matter of, because, you know, Obama's painting it as very much a good thing for private data. Like it's not bulk collection anymore. It's like on case by case basis. But you bring up good points that there's still going to be collection going on. And then it has like a long tail and could track you, you know, for a long time potentially. And then there is the strain on private government and that's or on private enterprise, and that's going to result in, I guess, higher costs through to the individual. But I think it's one of those cases where we're going to have to see. I think it's pretty early still. Like he's announced this plan, and he said earlier in the week that he was going to announce the plan. But there's still a lot left unaccounted for. It's not very detailed in terms of what he's announced so far, and they still have to work with the Senate and House to refine, you know, what exactly gets passed into law. So I think maybe we should wait and see sort of where the onus is for a lot of this stuff before we start saying, well, it's blanket bad for business.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm sensitive to the issue because I think in general the NSA actions that have been revealed by Edward Snowden have been very damaging to the U.S. economy in the long term. The most vital sector of the U.S. economy, arguably, is Silicon Valley and American technology companies. And now there's this flight globally away from U.S. companies. Government Brazil canceled their contract with IBM, I believe it was. And so this is going to have some negative impact on the economy. The federal government should be boosting the economy, not damaging it in the pursuit of national security. They have to balance one against the other, and also security against other considerations like the Constitution, things like that. So, mm-hmm. you know, that's the problem, is this lack of oversight. And you mentioned that there are a lot of details missing here. The biggest glaring detail missing is the fact that, according to President Obama's proposal, emergency situations are exempt from the need to get a court approval for getting information. So when somebody somewhere decides that something is an emergency situation, then they don't need a court approval. They can just go straight to AT&T, say, hand over the data. This is an emergency. Now, that makes you conjure up sort of real emergencies. You think, well, if there's another 9/11 or some other big national catastrophe, yeah, that's great. You know, everybody can support the need to just expedite the discovery of this to save lives and so on. But mm-hmm. what we don't know is who decides whether it's an emergency or not. Does the NSA decide what's an emergency and what isn't? Does the president? I mean, we don't know.
Just with stuff that we've seen in pop culture, like if you look at Homeland, like you can easily imagine those guys are, yeah, coming up with creative ways to say something's an emergency because they need access to data and they want to do it without going through the normal channels, right? But I think it's also important to note that is in contrast to the existing proposal by the House Representatives for the Intelligence Committee leaders, which says, you know, that's not required at all. Like, you don't even have to define a thing as an emergency. You collect the data, and then afterwards, you go to the judge, and they review whether it was appropriate or not. So it's sort of like, you know, everything's an emergency until it's not, as stated after the fact. So I think this is actually much better than that proposal. But still, again, agreed, frightening and open to plenty of interpretation as to what constitutes emergency and what doesn't.
That's right. If left vague, it becomes a source of power for people whose job is to defend national security. But once they have the ability to just make the decision, then all kinds of abuse could happen. You've even seen this in such trivial circumstances as the airport. You have, after 9/11, you had all these new rules about you have to listen to, you know, people who work for the airlines in terms of instructions about what to do and all this. And this has been used to kind of silence people complaining about customer service. They announce that it's like, you know, a terrorism oriented thing, and you have to sit down and shut up and stop complaining about the fact that your flight was delayed or whatever. And so, you know, abuse does happen unless there's very, very clear guidelines. And so that's something that we should all be looking for, to find out if this proposal does win the day, who determines it's an emergency and what is that criteria, because that is a built-in slippery slope in this whole thing. It's probably a concession that Obama is making to the National Security Agency, who is wanting as much leeway and flexibility as they can possibly get. So we'll be seeing that more information coming out about this all day and over the coming weeks, and it'll be an interesting development, but so far not so good, is my opinion. I think that this is a weak response to what has been going on in terms of phone collection metadata. Well, Twitter announced changes that'll make it more like Facebook or Google+. You'll soon be able to tag up to 10 people in a picture without adding the 140 character count, and also attach up to 4 pictures per tweet. The changes will show up in the iOS and Android apps, and possibly in the website in the future. Ashley Feinberg is a writer for Gizmodo who wrote an opinion piece on the changes, and we welcome her right now. Welcome, Ashley.
Hi, thanks.
Now, Twitter's hyper-minimalism seems to me like its secret sauce. Why would they dilute the sauce with more Facebook-like features, do you think?
The thing about Twitter is that if you aren't someone who uses it now, it's extremely difficult to get into. It's intimidating. There's all these hashtags and weird lingo that people use that is hard to understand, and it's alienating. And so Facebook, which is extremely easy to use, easy to understand, has tons of users, and Twitter wants that. But the thing is, they don't realize that's not who they are.
Right. It's kind of a catch-22, isn't it? I mean, everybody is on Facebook, and that's one of the reasons why people flee Facebook, to get away from Aunt Martha and, you know, her political rants and a million cat and baby pictures. And, you know, it gets to be too much, so people are looking for other places to go. And one of those places could be Twitter. Twitter has a kind of sort of minimalist cachet to it. Now, you came out strongly about against this, as from what I could tell. You would like to keep Twitter the way it is, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Well, the thing is that Twitter is doing something different in that it's right now it's not trying to do too much, although it's slowly changing because there's a huge user base who loves what Twitter is, love what they do. They're dedicated. They're not going to stop using it unless Twitter starts adding more of these features that kind of add more noise to this already very kind of crowded feed.
Growth is the key to like continued survival for Twitter, right? So if we, and I agree with you, I like it the way it is, and it's my precious little pet. But if I want it to stay my precious little pet, it's not going to be around for long because it's just not a sustainable business as is.
Well, that's the thing is that if it does grow, I mean, Facebook is huge, but Facebook is also dying because that attracts a lot of people, but it has a horrible retention rate because people don't want to be involved in something that kind of is just full of garbage, really.
Now, I would challenge the assertion that Twitter needs to grow in order to thrive financially. If you look at Apple, for example, everybody's been urging them to come out with a really, really cheap iPhone so they can compete on a market share basis against Android and Samsung. And yet they have the sweet spot of the market. They have the elite part of the market, the high spending, highly educated kind of first world problem crowd. And that's the sweet spot of the market. If they were to dilute their brand with cheap phones, you know, really low cost phones for the third world, that probably wouldn't benefit them financially. I think the Twit network here, we're the same way. We could have all kinds of dumbed down programming and have a lot more viewers, but instead we go after the smart viewers and try to have high quality, and that enables us to benefit financially. So Twitter, I think their place in the world is not to try to have as many people as Facebook. First of all, that's never going to happen. And second of all, it's probably not desirable for the existing users. I think their best bet is to be the elitist plaything that it is and really go after the high quality. I mean, they have all the big celebrities. They have all the technorati people. I mean, that's really the audience I think they should be cultivating. And that's a audience you can sell expensive things to.
Well, that's a good point, but you have to convince their management that those are the goals that they should be targeting. Because I think the management now and the investors currently see the key to sustainability and to future profitability as the kind of hypergrowth that we've seen from other companies like Facebook. So, I mean, you make very valid points. I just don't think that's in line with what the company itself has in mind or
sees for the future. And that's the problem, is that they don't kind of understand that there's nothing really wrong with being sort of intimidating, kind of being exclusive, because that's what's going to keep them going in the long run, I would say.
Yeah, it's like the secret menu at In-N-Out Burger. That's why In-N-Out Burger does well and McDonald's isn't that cool anymore, right?
Hold that thought, because our next interview guest's last name is Hamburger. So we'll get to that. We'll get to that issue in a minute. But there's also all kinds of testing that's been reported. Of course, all these social networks, especially Twitter and Facebook, they test things in small groups. And then people who spot these things in the wild can tell us what's going on. And some of the things they're testing are kind of surprising. For example, they're testing getting rid of hashtags and changing the tweet button to say share instead of tweet. They're talking about getting rid of at replies. I mean, you get rid of all that stuff, and it's not really Twitter anymore. I mean, Ashley, do you think that these tests are going to win the day and end up being the default user interface for Twitter?
I mean, I certainly hope not, but with the way they're going, they're trying to appeal to the general public, and the general public don't understand what hashtags are. They don't understand what at replies are. They know what sharing is. And so they're trying to basically change what made Twitter what it is to get people who may or may not use it at all anyway.
And this is especially weird because I remember a year or two ago when they got really serious about branding, and they basically said, no, you use tweet and you capitalize T when you use it. And this is the proper usage of all of our terminology. And this is sort of an about face about like they're getting rid of a lot of the branding and they're trying to go generic so that people have an easier access. But then if you do that, then what's unique about your company? Like, why not go to Facebook or why not go anywhere else?
Exactly. Yeah, kind of like a student, everybody's fears about what would happen when they went public is pretty much happening now, which is disconcerting for what's going to happen in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that they've been criticized for in all this is that the whole purpose of this is data collection, because if you can add 4 pictures and then tag up to 10 people mm-hmm. per picture, then what you're doing is you're essentially, you're doing 2 things. One, you're reaching out to people who may be Twitter laggards, who maybe they're not really involved in Twitter, and you're tagging them, getting them to come in and see what they're tagged on, and then they start getting involved in Twitter more, so they're driving traffic, which is fine. And then the other part is that they're mapping connections, what Facebook calls a social graph. They're finding out who is in your life, and then that's another source of potential, you know, targeted advertising and things like that. And that, you know, once you start going down that road where, you know, you become Facebook, where, you know, you're really, you know, you start censoring what people see, and with what they used to call edge rank. Now Facebook doesn't call it that anymore, but they still sort of filter what's in your newsfeed. You know, you can see Twitter getting more and more into that sort of thing, which is, you know, to me, again, exactly the thing that makes me like Twitter a lot more than Facebook. So do you think that Twitter is going down that road toward emphasizing the data collection aspect of it?
Yeah, I mean, certainly, because they see what Facebook's doing, and Facebook is very good at kind of having this giant, massive database that's available for them, for advertisers, for everybody, and it's very tempting and understandable why Twitter would want to do that. But the thing is, they're not Facebook, and they don't have the same tools, and they wouldn't work that way. So I think they're kind of trying to spread themselves too thin and be more than what they're capable of.
Data is the play everywhere, right? So they've got to figure out a way to make their data valuable. But I think you're right. They don't necessarily have to go over the same kinds of data that Facebook is targeting.
Well, Ashley, I want to thank you for coming on and telling us about this story. I enjoyed reading your piece. It was a nice opinion piece on this news. And again, thanks for coming on Tech News Today.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
All right. You can find Ashley at Gizmodo.com, of course, and on Twitter at AshFine. That's AshFein. Well, in a sec, we're going to tell you about another big move by Twitter. But first, I want to tell you about NatureBox. NatureBox is a subscription healthy snack service. That's right. You can subscribe to food, and this is the way to do it. Everybody talks about getting in better shape and eating better food, but it's difficult when you have snack foods all over the place, snack foods in the store. And the solution to that is to eat healthy snacks that will actually benefit your health as opposed to wreck it. And so the thing to do is to go to naturebox.com/twit and check out what's available. They don't have a dozen or 2 dozen different varieties of healthy snack food. They have more than 100 to choose from, and they have a really awesome way for you to discover some new snacks that you may not think that you would like. What you do is you get a box in the mail. You go through that. Maybe you love some of them and the other ones you don't love so much. So you go to the website and tell them which ones you don't love so much. And the next time they send you more of the ones you love and then some new ones to try. They have some really, really exciting and really interesting flavors. You can also select by savory, sweet, or spicy. So if you're a spicy junkie like me, you can say, yeah, give me all the spicy snacks. And they'll emphasize spicy. It's really a fantastic service. They send great tasting snacks right to your door with free shipping anywhere in the United States. And, you know, some of their flavors, for example, barbecued kettle kernels, French toast granola. They have a bunch of different types of granola, which is really great. I love granola. They have chili lime pistachios. These are, you know, these are whole pistachio nuts that are, they taste like lime and chili. They're very spicy and really, really good. All of these snacks have zero trans fats, zero high fructose corn syrup, and nothing artificial. You can also give it as a gift, and it makes a fantastic gift. And you can order 3, 6, or 12-month subscriptions for somebody that you care about. And they will love the taste of it, and they will love getting healthier by eating healthy snacks. So remember, to get 50% off, 50%, your first box, go to naturebox.com/twit. That's naturebox.com/twit. And we thank NatureBox for their support of Tech News Today. And I mentioned all kinds of great granola that they have. Here's cranberry macaroon granola. I'm trying not to eat the whole bag. It's really, really good. Good stuff. Really like it. I also love it when they sponsor the show, because then I get to eat this stuff. Well, Twitter will soon unveil a new music strategy, according to a report in the Wall Street Journal. The company pulled its one-year-old music app from the Apple iTunes App Store less than a week ago. The new strategy won't involve a dedicated app this time, but it will focus on music-centered conversations on Twitter itself and also in the regular Twitter apps. Joining us to explain this move is Ellis Hamburger, a reporter for The Verge. Welcome, Ellis.
Thanks for having me.
Now, first of all, why do you think the standalone app strategy failed so miserably?
I think part of the reason it failed is because it wasn't part of Twitter's main experience, and it also wasn't Twitter's content. I think Twitter is so afraid of the content that their top users are posting. They're posting it elsewhere. They're posting their music on SoundCloud. They're posting their videos on YouTube. And you can watch them within Twitter cards, but Twitter would so much rather them not link out. They want to own this. They want to own the music, and that might start with a SoundCloud partnership. But I think eventually what you might be able to see is 7 out of their 10 most followed people are musicians. What if those people could post their new song directly to Twitter? And you open the tweet, you tap play, and you start listening to it right there. I think that that's the scenario that they're really looking for.
Yeah, they see the Lady Gagas and the Justin Biebers of the world with massive followings and very active on Twitter, and they'd like to get a piece of the money that those artists are making. Well, maybe Lady Gaga might be an artist. Well, it's a matter of opinion. But there's a lot of music activity on Twitter. But as you point out, there's not a lot of buying music activity on Twitter, just a lot of promotion. And that makes a lot of sense. Now, you mentioned one partnership. What are some of the other partnerships that that may be involved in this whole deal?
I think all we know right now is that SoundCloud, maybe Beats are involved. And I think what they'll probably entail is a little closer partnership than just a straightforward Twitter card. I think it'll probably be integrated in a better way. And I think that it'll be integrated with some of their favorite artists in a way that feels native to Twitter and doesn't feel just like a card like everybody else has. I think it's really important that Twitter owns the content that its users are producing. And they're really scared of the fact that it's all text. And they want people to post photos so badly. That's what they say in their verified user guidelines. They say, please live tweet things that you're at. Please post photos. Please post selfies. And I think that the photo tagging thing is another example of a feature they rolled out that will raise the quality of the content on Twitter so that it doesn't just last a day. If you go to somebody's profile, like let's say Kim Kardashian, you could see all the photos tagged of her, and you might want to browse through them. Whereas browsing through a list of text tweets isn't that much fun. So I think
I think the mosaic redesign makes sense too, right? The one they've been testing where it's like more like a Facebook type layout and less like a single column. So you think that's another effort to bring people's media content into Twitter?
Definitely. I think the text stream is what we love. And you guys talked a little bit about that. It's so information dense, and it you can absorb so much all at once, especially if you're a fast reader like we've all trained ourselves to be. But now that they have photos in the stream, all of a sudden it takes longer to get through your stream. But for some people, if they only follow 50 people, they don't want to have to tap every tweet from a celebrity to see the photo that they post. So I think that for growth, like you were saying, Daryl, growth is so important to them, and they want to make the content as appealing as possible with as few taps as possible.
Now, that's a good way to get around the volume overwhelming problem that's going on then, is what you're saying, because a lot of people are overwhelmed. They come to it and they go like, what? There's so many. It's so fast. I can't keep up. That kind of thing.
Yeah, I remember when I first joined Twitter back in 2010, it was actually for an English technology and the humanities class I was in, and I did not understand what Twitter was about. It's so valuable to us news people, but I remember somebody told me to follow Scoble back in 2010, and oh my God, I was just, my feed was just saturated with Scoble. And I think that that's one of the problems Twitter has to address, is that a lot of people post more frequently than others, and they're trying to find a way to promote the best content to the most visible place possible. So I really wouldn't be surprised to see Twitter move away from the chronological, always on time model that they really have right now. And I think that will always be an option for people like us. But when you visit your feed and you're an average person, you're missing a lot of stuff. And Twitter doesn't want you to miss all that stuff. They don't want you to miss the best photos, the best videos, and maybe the best songs that the people you follow are posting. And generally, if something's more than a couple hours old, it's gone and you missed it. And I don't think they want that.
That's one of the things I like about Twitter, is that I can go away and then just come in and tap into the current stream. And I'm really interested mainly in what's current. And, you know, Facebook and Google Plus are places where, you know, I have to go back and say, you know, what I miss. And I feel kind of obligated that to find out what I missed. But Twitter is great because you can just sort of pay attention when you want and sort of wander away when you want. But speaking of places where users are saturated with Robert Scoble posts, Google Plus has a feature where that enables you to embed action items into your, you know, if you're a content seller or something like that, into posts. So, for example, if you're selling music, you can just embed a link in, directly into the post where you can listen to a sample or buy a song or something like that. It seems to me that Twitter, if they really want to get serious about music, would have to do something like this. Otherwise, it's just more links. Anybody can put links in there. They'd have to build some kind of mechanism if they want to get a micropayment for those music sales or whatever it is their plan is with this music. Do you think they may be headed in that direction, given all the other changes they've made recently?
Oh, yeah. And I wouldn't even be surprised if Twitter started somehow publishing its own breaking news stories, even if they're just bite-sized, because they need to remind people of the utility of what this is. And if utility to people is going on Twitter, clicking a link, and leaving Twitter, I think that's a problem for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, this is, you know, I don't think Twitter has licensed any catalogs. To the best of my knowledge, they have made no big deals with music companies or labels. So I think at this point, it sounds like they're going to be counting on the big celebrities and singers and also indie bands and so on to post their own music maybe, or do you think they're going to be making music deals?
I think it could be a combination of both, probably music deals first, and then maybe posting their music on Twitter. But I mean, we saw how long it took them to even start their own photo cache. I think it was originally with PhotoBucket. Now they do their own photos. But I think music is going to head in the same direction. They want the content to live on Twitter. And I think most cases, these celebrities, like let's say Kelly Clarkson, her biggest following is probably on Twitter. And SoundCloud is a really important place for a lot of these people, like let's say Snoop, to post their songs. And SoundCloud has its own feature set where you can annotate songs as you go along and you can comment on songs. But I think the average person just wants it as fast as they can get it. They don't care where it is. And Twitter doesn't want you leaving their platform. So why don't they host it? I think that's the direction that we're heading in.
I mean, is that something you think that users will buy into, though? Because we've seen them try to take over the photo relationship, but that hasn't put a damper on Instagram success, for instance, right? Like Instagram still has more users than Twitter does. I think as of the new report this morning.
Instagram just passed Twitter in their mobile users, right?
Yeah. So, like, do people care? I know that Twitter wants this, and Twitter wants people to stick around for the content, but is it enough? Will they be able to offer enough to get them to change their habits and not click through to SoundCloud or not keep using SoundCloud?
I know they're
supposed to be partnering with SoundCloud, but eventually, as you say, the goal is probably to supplant them. But can they offer enough to get people to do it?
I think they will. They just need to keep reminding content creators. Every day they need to remind content creators, hey guys, your biggest following is on Twitter. You want people to have one-tap access to your music, and you could envision a world where you go to somebody's Twitter profile, and Twitter might still be very much about the culture of now, but they still want to index your best photos. They still want to list your songs that you posted to Twitter inside of one concise view. So I think that for a lot of people, they don't care where they find the music. It's like on SoundCloud, you can categorize and make playlists out of all your favorite songs on SoundCloud. But I think that you might have trained yourself to go there simply because that was the music-friendly platform. Mm-hmm. But if you don't need to go to one more place, I don't think that people will.
Well, it all makes me nervous. I'm afraid that in their attempt to become the new Facebook, they may become the new MySpace. And
yeah, I just hope third-party apps stick around, like Tweetbot or something, that will just give me basically Twitter Classic as all these changes come on, because I don't know if I'm just old and curmudgeonly, but none of this sounds good to me. It sounds horrible.
Well, you know, and that's another area where they've become less Twitter-like. In the beginning, of course, it was third-party apps that made Twitter what they were. That was one of the great things about Twitter, is you could have all these third-party apps, and over the last couple of years, they've been clamping down on those, and who knows, they could increasingly clamp down on third-party apps because they want it all themselves. I just think, they have something unique here, and becoming a second-rate Facebook isn't nearly as great as being the one and only Twitter, and that's the big risk. They're really unique in the industry, and if they fritter away all their uniqueness, then why would anybody go there? I think it's very risky what they're doing. I hope they know what they're doing. I'm not optimistic, actually.
So, it's interesting to see how they've been shifting their priorities and shifting the language that they use in their product. Like you were saying, maybe they're switching the language of retweet to share, and they want to make this more obvious what it is. But how do you guys think they could make Twitter's value proposition more evident to most people? I know I try and explain Twitter to my friends, and I say, guys, this is the news right now. This is the people that you care about, what they're thinking. They might not post it in an article. They might not post it in a song, like, let's say, Vampire Weekend's Ezra Koenig. But you get so much value from following somebody like him on Twitter. And it's not as easy as it could be to explain the value proposition of Twitter. So I think that that's their biggest challenge right now, setting aside content, is to speed up growth, especially as a company that, you know, has to deliver growing quarterly earnings. They need to explain to the average person why they need to be on this platform. And I do think that that starts with celebrities. Even if it's just hashtags and commercials, that's not enough. They need to be saying, here's why you need to follow me on Twitter.
This is precisely one of the mistakes that a lot of content creators make. They have some really hardcore audience that makes them what they are, and then they're all these pretty disinterested, pretty unactive, pretty not really paying attention people that they're trying to go after. And in trying to go after those people, they alienate the really active people who are really using the platform. So again, they don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater here. They want to gain more users. Yeah, that's fine. They want to make more money. Why not? But if they piss off the big users, the big celebrities, the Silicon Valley types, and make them go somewhere else, because you can bet that startups are going to move in to fill in the gaps and provide what Twitter used to provide, and that's the end of that.
Yeah.
What were you saying, Daryl?
App.net just has to come back again.
I think that's one of the reasons they're keeping TweetDeck, is to appease people like us.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Ellis, I want to thank you for coming on the show today. Very interesting discussion. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
All right. You can find Ellis on TheVerge.com and with the coveted Twitter handle, Hamburger. That's not Hamburglar. That's owned by McDonald's, but Hamburger. All right. Well, thanks again. Well, Microsoft is interested in Google Glass-like smart glasses technology. At least they're interested enough to spend up to $150 million to buy smart glass-related intellectual property from the Osterhout Design Group, according to an exclusive in TechCrunch by Ingrid London. Ingrid joins us this morning to tell us about it. Welcome, Ingrid.
Hi.
You're Skyping in from London, is that right?
Yes, I am. Ingrid London from London.
It's easy to remember. It's a built-in mnemonic. Anyway, so what did Microsoft buy here exactly? What did they purchase? I know that there was some chatter months ago about them possibly acquiring the company, but they didn't do that, did they?
Yeah, well, so what happened was they were in discussion with them. And at the time, there was always a question of whether it would be IP and the whole company or just the patents. As it turned out, it's just the patents. It's up to $150 million. Originally, we thought it could be up to $200 million if they bought the whole company. This is a pretty impressive, deal. It covers only 6 patents that have been approved, but another 75 or more, maybe around 80 or so, of U.S. and international patents that are still in pending stage, likely to be approved.
Now, this deal took place last year, didn't it? And it's been a secret until you uncovered it today, isn't that right?
Well, so this is what happened. So we got wind of the fact that they were looking at Osterhout last year. There's been a lot of talk about wearables and Google Glass and other headgear, computing devices that you mount on your head.
The head top environment.
So in that context, we heard, oh, guess what? Microsoft is looking into this too. So that's how we started looking into this. Dug around, our sources kind of pointed us in the right direction, and then things got quiet, very quiet. And I'd been, sort of looking at it every once in a while. I was sort of checking in and trying to figure out anything more, how it had advanced. And when we reported that, it was pretty far along already. Otherwise, we wouldn't have, reported it. And nothing happened. Then, Facebook, landed with their Oculus VR deal for $2 billion. So, of course, I pinged one of my contacts. I said, hey, whatever happened with Microsoft? And it turned out, oh, actually, the deal closed. So at that point, I thought, oh, God, I better get back on this. So I started digging around some more. One thing led to another. that's how I got there.
That's fantastic. Now, Osterhout also has a patent for a virtual reality headset, don't they? Speaking of Oculus.
Yeah. So they're a really interesting company. I mean, Ralph Osterhout is not your average gadget maker. He's a kind of career long inventor who's done millions and, you know, dozens and dozens of things. He's gone all the way from submarine gear to for the Navy, all the way through to, you know, pens that, you know, you can use to shoot people. You know, he's designed props for James Bond movies, and he's built things for the military. And so he's done everything. He's very low profile, though. And it was I never managed to, you know, get him to talk to me. On the record, I was pretty excited. He finally talked to me and kind of gave me some details, which I was able to use in the story, as you can read on TechCrunch.
Now, he has some strong opinions about the Microsoft Oculus deal, doesn't he?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, he's got some pretty fascinating, you know, ideas. I don't know if Daryl's got it, but on Skype, I sent you a funny photograph. There's this, like, I don't know if you can post that. It's just sort of, his take is, this is a great, you know, obviously it's great news for any company that's working in this space, because if Facebook is putting out, you know, they're putting this much money into this kind of technology, that's a clear sign of the interest. And, you know, if you couple that with what Google Glass is doing and obviously Microsoft's, you know, what they may be doing actually in making devices, but clearly in spending money for the IP for these devices, you know, it says a lot about what's happening in the space and where it's going. So, yeah.
Isn't this more of just sort of like girding themselves for what they see as a potential future where everyone's building these things and then inevitably there's going to be legal arguments that happen and there are going to be suits filed? Because
yeah.
I think Microsoft has been working on this technology themselves for a long time, right? Which is probably why they weren't all that interested in the company in general. They just wanted some early IP that they could really use as a bedrock for if you guys come after us, we got these, right?
Yeah, right. So there's two sides to this. The first one is that for sure this can be used to help them build their own stuff. But the other side is the IP side of it all. You're absolutely right. I mean, they've made, I think one estimate that I found was there's an estimated that they make about $2 billion a year in Android licensing. And by that, I mean people who make devices based on Android or Chrome OS have to pay Microsoft a royalty fee for the fact that they're basically touching some patents that Android is built on that Microsoft touches.
All right, we have another guest.
Go away.
Well, Ingrid, I want to thank you for coming on today. We have to wrap this up pretty soon because we have a big Microsoft event coming up at 10 o'clock. But a very great article. I really appreciate the fact that you're sharing your exclusive with us here today. And again, thanks for coming on Tech News today.
Yeah, sorry about that.
That's great. No, that's cool. That's cool.
Children have been ejected. children have been ejected from the room. Sorry about that.
Well, we got two for the price of one, so I appreciate it. Thanks again.
All right.
You can find Ingrid on TechCrunch.com and also on Twitter at Ingrid London. That's IngridLunden.
Thank you.
Well, the effect of the Internet of Things and the home automation revolution is that ordinary household items will become consumer electronics gadgets that are sold by consumer electronics companies. The most recent example is Samsung, which announced today a new line of light bulbs. Samsung's new smart bulb products supports Bluetooth and can be controlled with a mobile app. The company also announced an L-tube series that replaces dumb fluorescent tube lights with smart ones. Samsung's announcement comes just days after LG rolled out its own line of smart bulbs. And while Samsung's prices haven't been announced, the standard LG smart bulb costs about $32. Well, in just a second, I'm going to tell you a follow-up on the story of Twitter and its fate in Turkey. But first, I want to tell you about Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy for you to create your own professional website or online portfolio. They have 25 beautiful templates for you to start with. And then once you've selected a template, you can go in and modify it to your heart's content with their easy-to-use tools. Anybody can do this. You don't have to be an expert or even experienced in building websites in order to use Squarespace. And if you do have a question, their tech support via chat or email is open 24/7, and their tech support staff is very, very good. They also have resources in there and videos and tutorials that help you learn how to be a better webmaster. If you have a small company, you can sell things. All of the subscription plan levels are e-commerce ready, and they also have a logo creation tool, which you can see a video of on their blog, which is at blog.squarespace.com. And I recommend that you go to that blog and check out what they have there. They also have some really cool commercials and other information. Squarespace is mobile ready. Their website, your website, will look fantastic on a small device, on a phone, a tablet, or, of course, on a giant screen. The sites automatically recreate themselves to be perfectly native on the device that the user is looking at. And they have a Squarespace metric app for iPhone and iPad that lets you monitor and check your site stats. So start a free 2-week trial with no credit card required and start building your website. When you decide to sign up with Squarespace, make sure you use the offer code TNT. That'll get you a discount of 10% off and to show your support for Tech News Today. And we thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. And remember that a better web awaits, and it starts with your new Squarespace website. Well, we've been reporting on the blocking of Twitter in Turkey, and we told you yesterday that a court ruled the block illegal in order that Twitter be unblocked, which hasn't happened yet. This morning, we've learned that the government is now blocking YouTube as well. So the blocking is continuing despite the court order, and that is an unfortunate development, in my opinion. Well, in other news, walking while texting can be hazardous, but help is on the way from Apple. The company is patenting what they call transparent texting. The idea is to show the live view through the camera as the background for your iMessage window. That way you can see the open manhole or the rapidly approaching telephone pole in the background of your conversation as you're text walking down the street. Of course, apps that do this have existed for years in the App Store, but what matters is who gets the patent first, I guess. Well, Daryl, I want to thank you for stepping in and guest co-anchoring today on Tech News Today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's a great time.
You have some really great insights on this stuff, and I hope to have you back again soon.
Definitely.
All right. Well, there are lots of ways to subscribe to Tech News Today, and one of them is on YouTube. You can subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/technewstoday. You can also subscribe to us on Twitter by following us at Tech News Today TV. And send us an email at tnt@twit.tv and tell us what's on your mind, or you can leave a voicemail by calling 260-TNT-SHOW. Also, don't miss our evening newscast, Tech News Tonight, at 4 p.m. Pacific. And also stick around for our special coverage of Microsoft's big announcement coming up at 10 a.m. Pacific. That's the thing that moved Tech News Today to 9 o'clock today. I'll be joined by Paul Thurrott. Well, my name is Mike Elgin. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you either at 10 o'clock for the Microsoft thing or tomorrow. Take care.